On the Bookshelf with your host, Dave Doug Kirby.
It's my great pleasure to welcome back to On the Bookshelf Tom Sullivan. His newest book is As I See It, My View from the Inside Out from Howard Books. Tom is an actor, singer, entertainer, author, and producer. His guest stints on TV led to 2 Emmy nominations. A major motion picture was made of his life based on his autobiography, If You Could See What I Hear. And he is now writing and producing for TV and film and enjoying running along the beach with his dog. And he and his wife, Patty, have been married for over 41 years and have 2 adult children. And it is a, and by the way, Tom doesn't see things exactly the way you and I see things. And that's what we're going to talk about. Tom Sullivan, great pleasure to welcome you back to On the Bookshelf.
Dave, I loved it when you and I were together before.
Indeed, indeed. I'm so excited.
Well, I can't thank you enough. That book, the book we talked about back then, was a novel called A Short Life Well Lived.
Yes.
And thanks to you and a number of people around the country, the book has really touched a lot of souls, and I'm very grateful for it. And this one, this As I See It, I had to get this old to write it.
Yes.
It's really a very different book, David. In that I think most people live their lives externally. What I mean is, last year the Academy of Ophthalmology, you know, eye doctors, and they found out that most people take in about 85% of what they know with their eyes. Now that's just stuff, the external stuff.
Right.
But in the same sense, I think most humans see life based on how it affects them more than how they affect it.
Hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
And if we are, in that sense, self-engaged, the question, if you're a person of faith, is that wasn't how God intended it. We were meant to be vessels of love and prayer and hope. And in that context, the first job is take a look at yourself. How looking at life inside out rather than outside in allows you to say, how am I affecting the world? You know, and when I take that look, what do I find? So, for example, when you're blind, you're lucky because, in my case, I've never met an ugly person unless they wanted to be. I've studied the world without the characterization of labels. You know, I don't structure built-in prejudices. And so my view of the world, both in terms of the simple joys of all of the senses working together and the perception that an inside-out look is far more empathetic in God's sight, is a pretty good way to deal with it.
What really impressed me when reading your new book was the realization that you came to, and again, as Tom says, it takes living a while to start to figure things out, doesn't it?
It does.
And what Tom wrote was that he began to see his lack of physical sight as not being an accident of birth, although what happened was in 1947 he was born prematurely, given too much oxygen in the incubator, and it damaged his retinas and took his sight. If he'd been born a little earlier, he wouldn't have made it to an incubator. He just would have died. If he'd been born a little later, if he was a little younger, they would have worked some of those things out, and maybe he wouldn't be blind. But I think the thing that impressed me the most is when you began to realize that however we are is not an accident, that God doesn't make mistakes, and that God does what he does in our lives for the purpose of the kingdom. And although we may rail at it at the time and spend a lot of time wondering why, in the long context of our life and in eternity, there is a very good reason for the things that occur to us and how we use them to serve his kingdom. And that's not wisdom that you get when you're 20 years old.
No, David, I so appreciate the way you've said this. In fact, I'm going to take you on the road with me to do all this.
That's a deal.
Had I been born sighted, you know, based on how I grew up, you know, in Boston with this raucous Irish Catholic life, You know, when my dad owned Irish pubs and managed prize fighters. In fact, when I went to college, I'll never forget, he showed up at the dean's office carrying two suitcases full of small unmarked bills. That's how he paid my tuition. But I would have grown up in that typical Boston neighborhood, you know, Ben Affleck, Matt Damon kind of neighborhood. And I would have been probably a doc, maybe, or a lawyer, or a teacher. Wonderful professions. But you know what, pal? I never would have been blessed, through God's grace, to write 14 books, or make all those records, or make those movies, or spoken to 4,000 or 5,000 corporations, or, you know, raised millions and, thank God, millions and, and I said it as a prayer, millions of dollars for blind children. So in the scheme of our placement, you had it dead right. And this book is really, don't you think, that it's the celebration of that idea.
Right, right. And we'll be honest with you too, Chom, that reading your book challenged me to reflect on things that I ran through. Now, I'm not blind, but I am extremely nearsighted, and if it was not correctable, I would be considered legally blind. Mm-hmm. Thank God for my purposes, I am able to see. Even without glasses, I can see shapes and colors, and that's a great joy. But it is correctable. But when I was a kid, I always thought that was an awful, awful thing. And I always prayed, God, fix my eyes. When I wake up, I don't want to wear glasses. I want to be able to, so I can play ball with the other kids and not have to worry about getting them broken all the time. And then I read about your friend when you moved next door, and he says, hey, kid, want to play? I remembered that from the book before, and I love that story of your real friend who had that kind of joyful attitude towards you even when he was a boy.
Well, you know what? This goes to, again, the innocence that God truly wants us to have, the transparency. That little boy who looked at a blind little boy and said, simply, want to play. It was as simple as two little boys in that innocence. Cool story about, I know this is off the subject, but you'll love the story.
Okay. So,
Billy Hannon, you know, he's the guy that taught me, you remember, to play baseball,
right,
and wrestling, all those things. Well, recently, his daughter called me, Karen, and she asked if I would be the celebrant at her wedding. You know, you can get a one-day deal.
Mm-hmm.
So I did. I married them. And at the end of the service, Billy Hannon said to me, listen, he said, you come with me. He said, come over to the bar here. He said, I've got a special bottle of Middleton Irish whiskey, you and I are going to... So we sat down, and now we've had a few drinks together, and he's the father of the bride, so he's getting very emotional. He said, listen, you remember when we were 10 years old? I said, yeah. He said, you were I was the only friend you ever had, right? I said, yeah. I taught you everything, didn't I? Yeah. Taught you to play baseball and football and wrestle and everything. Yes, Billy, you did. And you know, I taught you to fish, right? I said, yeah, that was one of the great days. We went to the town pier, and I dropped my line in, and I caught my first flounder. And you took it off the hook, and you put it in my hands. And for the first time, I knew what a fish was. And then I caught 9 more. He said, no, you didn't. I said, what do you mean I know I didn't? He said, well, I just put it back on the hook 9 more times. The true mark of a pal, right?
Yes, indeed.
If Jesus could feed the flock, the 5,000 with loaves and fishes, I guess Billy could hook me 9 more times.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I was really charmed to find out about some of the people that you met.
Yeah.
Not just the ones that you met growing up in your dad's bar, because that's pretty fascinating too. But also people that the rest of us mostly think of as just being celebrities and not really so much as humans. It was delightful to read about how Betty White became a friend. She and her husband, Alan Ludden, that they were friends of yours when you were a young man and first starting out in performance career, and how they introduced you to a young lady and all of that. You want to tell us that story?
Yeah, it's a great story. This is substantial because God places messengers that are placed there for a reason. In this case, Betty White. So they came, Betty and Alan, do summer stock on Cape Cod, and I was playing in a bar to earn money to stay at school. And I was, at that time, how do I put this, Dave, on this show? Like it's okay. I was sort of a skirt chaser. So
yeah.
If a good-looking girl walked in, I was going to find a way to meet her. So the bartender said to me, Tom, there's a beautiful girl at the bar. He said, this girl is unbelievable. He said, you got to find a way to talk to her. Well, thank goodness she leaned over the bar and said, hey, can you play by the time I get to Phoenix? So I said, sure. And I sang and played by the time I get to Phoenix. At the end, she was very emotional, with tears coming down her face. She said, oh, that was so beautiful. She said, do you mind if I ask you something? I said, no. She said, do you mind if I ask how you went blind? I said, well, I don't really like to talk about it. She said, well, please. I said, well, I was an F-4 pilot in Vietnam and got shot down and spent 6 years in Haiphong prison, and you're the first girl I've met since I got out. Well, Betty White heard this, and she said, young lady, he is so full of crap. And then Betty said, Tom, there is a girl who comes in here every night, and if you could see her eyes look at you, you would never date anyone else. She said, you come with me, and she marched me over to this table. And she said, young lady, what's your name? And the girl said, I'm Patty. And Betty said, this is Tom Sullivan. Sit down. And she pushed me into the chair. And Patty and I have been married 43 years.
It's really wonderful to think about famous people as being people first. And I realize there are certainly celebrities who are not nice people, but Betty White has always been kind of a favorite of mine.
Well, David, it's interesting about this, and this is, again, the arc. And I wonder if sometimes in God's sight he conjures it. With famous people, and I spent all of those years, as you know, interviewing him with Good Morning America,
mm-hmm.
The ones climbing the ladder are jerks, and the ones falling off are jerks. But the bigger the celebrity, the nicer they are.
Hmm.
I mean, one of my favorite stories, I don't mean to turn this into a story hour, but they're fun. I was doing a movie, Airport 77. It was a horrible movie. But we were all locked on this airplane because it crashed in the ocean.
Right.
So, for weeks. So we'd get poker games going, and I'd play with Braille cards, and they all thought I was cheating. Well, the piano, the plane crashes, the piano crushes me, and I die. But before I die, I have this love scene with this beautiful girl. I'm telling her, I'm sorry, we're not going to have a life. And we finish the scene, and everybody's applauding, except Jimmy Stewart and Jack Lemmon. And Jimmy Stewart is standing on the side of the stage, and the tears are pouring down his face. He's laughing so hard. And I went over to him. I said, Mr. Stewart, is there something wrong? He said, well, yeah. You know, when you died? I said, yes, sir. He said, well, you're the only dumb person I ever saw do it with a smile on your face. I had no idea of facial expression, so I died in the scene smiling. So if Airport 77 is ever on, watch a blind guy die and smiling.
We are talking to Tom Sullivan, who is the author of As I See It, My View from the Inside Out from Howard Books. There is a story in the book that I had never heard before, and it's one of those parental stories that just grips your heart, and particularly scary because of the situation that you are in. You are watching your daughter, and you're on the telephone, and you hear the door open, and things get very complicated after that. God intervenes, and that's a wonderful story, and it's okay if this is a story hour, because this is an astonishing story, and is a miracle story, and I'd love to, if you would relate that to our listeners.
The telephone rang. I was supposed to be babysitting for our children while Patty was at the grocery store, and the guy on the other end was Johnny Carson. He had been in a club and heard me sing and was asking if I'd do the show, and I did it 60 times with him. Well, my daughter had crossed the living room, and I didn't hear her, and I didn't hear her open the patio door or cross the deck, but, Dave, I heard the splash when she fell in the pool, and I scrambled outside and fell into the water, and I remember thinking the only way I'll find her is to dive down and grope along the bottom and hope that I touch a hand or a foot or anything, and I made two circuits of the pool and didn't find her, and when I came up the third time, I was standing in about shoulder-deep water, and I literally looked up to heaven, and I screamed at God. I did. I screamed. How can you do this? How can you do this? This child is going to die, and it's because I'm blind? What is that, a joke to you? I said. And then I cried, and I said, God, please, if you'll give me this one miracle, I'll live an exemplary life. Now, here's to me here's the interaction that so sums up the way God works with us. I heard the sound that you wouldn't hear. I heard the sound of her air bubbles. They blipped their way to the surface, and I followed the bubbles and found her in about 9 feet of water and brought her up and respirated her. And when she breathed, it was like listening to a dove at sunset on a summer night. But the point of this is, the miracle wasn't that God reached down through divine intervention and scooped the little girl out of the water or sent an angel or whatever. He allowed an ordinary man, Tom, to do an extraordinary thing, which suggests to me that each of us is given enough grace not only to find our life in heaven, but to make the most in this life of every gift and talent, knowing that in the divine plan, God provides us with unlimited opportunity. It's choice, though. So I've chosen to say, God, you know what, God? You gave me plenty of grace. It's my job to use it effectively, to maximize my talents, to maximize my engagement with people, to maximize my communication skill. And at 65 years old now, the feeling that my life is moving faster and faster means I have to do better and better at it. But it is a major part of my faith. That's why today I have no doubt about faith, because I'm convinced that I've been provided with enough grace. I once was lost, now I'm found. Huh?
Mm. We're talking to Tom Sullivan, who's the author of As I See It, A Perspective on Life, Love, and Purpose from Howard Books, which is a division of Simon & Schuster, Inc. Tom talks about the events that we've discussed already, but he also, in the book, talks about seeing life from the inside out. And I love that concept of that we are not so trapped by our externals, that instead this is a mystic thing, isn't it? That is, we have an internal life that we are called to be more than just observers of things. We are called to be participants in the creation, and we don't have to. For those of us who can see, we rely far too much on seeing and waste the possibilities because we don't hear things. Tom describes for us in his book how many different types of soil there are, types of sand there that he feels and can touch on the beach where he runs. I just find that amazing. Tom, I grew up next to the beach, the other ocean, the Atlantic, and I never really particularly thought about how many different types of sand I ran across as I was running into the water, or that I splashed along in the edge, or used to build a sandcastle when I was little. Sand was sand. It was building material, or it was something to lead me to the water.
Which brings me full circle, Dave, to why it's okay for me to be blind. I mean, the fact that I can point that out. I was running this morning on the beach with Baron, the guide dog. And there are 15 different kinds of waves, all from the ones at low tide that sound like a cannonade in a war zone, you know, to the ones at high tide that sound like Muhammad Ali and Joe Frazier are giants in a Rocky movie and they're having a heavyweight match. There's a restaurant up on the cliffs where I run, and every morning you can smell bacon and eggs and coffee and muffins and stuff come drifting down the smells and blend with eucalyptus and lilac and orange blossom and single-cell life clinging to sedimentary rock and weed and kelp and that amazing ocean smell that you know so much on the Alabama coast.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of my beach, there's a bunch of sea lions that come in every once in a while, and when I'm running, they become like an Olympic audience calling us in. There's nothing more beautiful than the human voice. There's nothing warmer than a hug well meant. There's nothing that can mean more than a handshake where you say, I know this fellow is glad to meet me. There's nothing like the sound of a voice when it says, I love you. I mean, we start to track all this and think, gee, Tom, I'm the lucky one. I know that heaven's going to be the ultimate in perfection and oneness with God. But you know what? This ain't bad.
Mm-hmm.
This ain't bad.
Yeah. I read in another book some time ago the idea that everything that's good on earth will be even better in heaven. And everything that's bad on earth will not make the transition.
Yeah.
And I like that because there are so many beautiful things about the world that
we
live in.
I'll give you an example. So somebody said to me the other day, what's going to be the most important better? Because I've read that too, Dave.
Mm-hmm.
What's the most important better that you want? I said, well, I want God to build Augusta up in heaven. So I can play Augusta every day. I'm not a member of Augusta. I want to play Augusta. So the guy said, well, if you got it, what would you want to shoot? He said, I would guess you'd want to shoot 65 and beat Nicholas. I said, no. I want to shoot 82 and go into the clubhouse and, if I may use the expression, bitch at the bartender. You know? I don't want it perfect. I want heaven. I want Gabriel to still offer me challenges, things to do.
Yeah, I do not believe that God went to all that trouble to make heaven for human beings so we can sit around and do nothing.
Oh, no.
I see all the wonderful things, music and everything else.
I'm going to do a movie with Betty White when we're up there.
I like that.
Yeah.
I'm hoping we get to do a little duet, too.
Okay.
I'm a singer, too, but I'm not much of a pianist, so you'll have to play.
I can do that.
Okay.
You know, like they say about blind people, we either play them or tune them.
Of all the things that that surprised you the most about this newfound realization that God has changed us into the kind of people that he wants us to become and shaped us so that we would be molded in his likeness. What was the biggest surprise to you about this revelation to you?
That some of the people I've known that were absolutely not only the most beautiful in God's sight, but the most beautiful in mine, inside out, were complex, disabled human beings who sometimes make others uncomfortable. My favorite is a guy named Mike Rance. He has stage 4 cerebral palsy.
Mm.
When I met him, he came to the Winter Park ski program, and they carried him in a stretcher, and I said, why are you here? And he said, I'm going to ski. I said, Mike, I don't know. Well, 4 years later, he was the director of instruction for the program. He had fallen in love with Ginny, and they had two little girls. He gained enough mobility back so he could drive on his own, ski on his own. He is probably the single most warm, funny, sarcastic human I've ever known, and he does things to me that are disgusting. One day, we were up skiing, and there's a run up there called Drunken Frenchman, and it's called that because a Frenchman died on it.
Mm.
Well, it's all molded. It's huge bumps, and no blind person should ever go there. So I came in to ski one morning, and he said to me, hey, Sullivan, you know that Drunken Frenchman? I said, yeah. Last night, he said, the trucks were out there, and they groomed it. I said, really? Oh, yeah, it's awesome. Go ski it. Well, 37 falls. I fell 37 times getting down this mountain. And at the bottom, he was waiting for me, and he looked down at this hulk in the snow, and he said, you know, you blind people are really stupid. Yeah, I hated him. Oh, he did all kinds of things to me. One time, he had me cut down a Christmas tree because he wanted a Christmas tree in his house, so we took a snowmobile and went out. I cut down the Christmas tree. And I thought I was out in the middle of the woods. I was in the middle of a ski run. We got arrested and put in jail, and Patty had to bail us out on Christmas Eve. I said, what were you thinking? He said, I never thought they'd arrest two gimps.
I think the one thing that really challenged me also about your book, Tom, and I know we're getting close on time, so and I want to bring this up, and that is that I feel like people who have physical and mental challenges these days are much more visible in our communities, But there still are ways that we who are, I hesitate to say perfect physical shape, because,
yeah, I know what you mean.
You know, that are normally abled, I suppose. There are still ways that we can help out. And I will say that I have a young man who is a student of mine at the university where I teach. And I never thought much about how difficult it is to get in and out of buildings if you're in a wheelchair until he became one of my students. And I realized that many times he has to go through all kinds of things to get into the bottom floor of a building. The doors are easy to open, but not necessarily if you're sitting in a wheelchair. So
right. We
have to look out for him. And when we see his car pull up, there's a couple of us now that have learned, just go hang around the doors. And when he comes up the sidewalk, say, hey, come on in. Can I get the door for you? But that's still not the perfect solution.
No. The issue is, Dave, we have to accommodate the disability, but we have to acknowledge the ability.
Right.
And by saying it that way, we need to eliminate the patronage that goes with this. And we need to look at each person, in God's sight, as a human being who is a multitude of things. You know, I'm Tom Sullivan, whatever the heck I am, author, singer, actor, you know, humanitarian, athlete, who happens to be blind. I think the secret is to let the disabled human being demonstrate the ableness and assume that they'll give you the guidelines, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Get the disability out of the way. Acknowledge it, but get it out of the way.
Right. Don't let it be the one thing that's the big marker of your relationship.
It's the great sadness, Dave, of my life. If you said to me, hey, Tom, what do you, in God's sight, what do you want to do most in life? Here's what I wanted to say when they put a gravestone down. Here lies Tom Sullivan. He was a husband, father, author, actor, athlete, and as I just said, he's a man who happened to be blind. If I can change the labels, then my life will have redeemed my right to heaven, if I can do that.
Well, Tom, I'll say one thing. Having seen you on television, having watched you interview people, having read about skiing and playing golf and surfing and all these other things that you have done without the benefit of sight, but with the help of loved ones and friends, even ones that don't tell you where the rocks are. I think if you can handle all of that, I think it's not too much for us, the rest of us, to think about caring about other people and not making a big deal about what's different about us, but finding the commonality that we are created by a loving God, and we are all made in different ways, but he has made us deliberately.
I'm glad he made you a friend of mine, Dave. I hope each time I write a book, you and I get to do this.
Me too. It is always a great joy for me to get a chance to talk to you, Tom. Hey, Tom, tell us that website again, okay?
SullivanLive.com. Dave, thanks for everything.
Hey, Tom, it is a great joy to get a chance to talk to you again. Loved your book. If we don't get to meet in this life, I look forward to seeing you in the next and doing duets.
I'm going to be looking for a guy to kibitz with. I need a caddy on Augusta.
It's a deal.
Okay. Thanks, Dave.
Take care. For more information on Tom's books and other activities, check his website, SullivanLive.com. Once again, our guest today, Tom Sullivan, the author of As I See It, My View from the Inside Out from Howard Books, a division of Simon & Schuster, Inc. Tom is an actor, singer, pianist, entertainer, author, producer, television entertainer, soap opera star, and much, much more. And oh, by the way, he isn't able to see with his eyes, but with his heart, he sees just great. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll see you next time right here on your favorite radio station for On the Bookshelf. Until then, I'm your host, Dave Doc Kirby. Thanks for listening, and God bless. On the Bookshelf, copyrighted by Kirby Creative Services, Inc., used by permission of Troy Broadcasting Corporation.